Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, it seems like a long time ago, given all the economic fights we've had here in Washington, all the fascination, of course, with Bin Laden, many other issues that have come down the pike. But for many, many weeks earlier this year, a lot of our attention was focused on the state of Wisconsin and these huge fights over collective bargaining, major spending cuts, concessions on the part of state employees and so forth. And some of those issues are still in court and they're still yet to be resolved. But Scott Walker getting a major dose of vindication. This comes from Chief Executive Magazine, and I believe it's each year about 500 CEOs rank the 50 states based on how hospitable they are for business. And the biggest jump this year? That's right, the state of Wisconsin from 41st last year to 24th this year, the biggest jump of any state, 17 spots. You got to think that that's looking pretty good for Governor Walker in Madison, and this is how he explained it this morning on Fox and Friends as to why that big jump happened.
Started January 3rd when we took office with major changes. Reduced the overall burden of doing business in our state by lowering taxes, regulations, litigation, health care costs. All those things we acted on in the first days of office with a legislature that switched to Republican control.
And he went on to say that on some of the issues, even a lot of Democrats and an independent came alongside. And Jim, if you look at the list and the top of the list, it's not a surprise that reducing taxes and the size of government works for growing the state's economy. Texas, North Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, Indiana, Virginia, you know, states that you would expect and have done very well over time. And it's because they don't drain their people and their businesses.
The Wisconsin fights, that was like what, March? And it feels like it was like a year ago.
It does.
It's the kind of news cycle we've been in lately. One thought that comes to mind is I can easily see the liberals throwing a fit over this saying, well, what do you expect from a bunch of CEOs? All they do is run companies that employ people and make stuff that people want to buy and hire people to make the stuff. Who wants that in their state? My understanding is that the bottom three were Illinois, New York, and California, which is not surprising. I think that's kind of indicative of, you know, a bunch of states that have had either very liberal governance in recent years or what many people would characterize as rhino. Certainly nothing resembling conservative governance in recent years. These are blue states. These are heavily unionized states. And these are, you could argue, states that are in real dire straits. So they just have, you know, they do not have a good environment for business, and those policies have chased out everyone who would vote differently, and now they're left with a group of voters who refuse to acknowledge that. That's why they reject Meg Whitman and go with Jerry Brown, and you know, California is probably doomed as a result of that. So kudos to Scott Walker. I'm sure that, you know, his detractors will insist that, you know, CEO praise is nothing to be proud of. But, you know, I suspect that those looking for work will notice which states are becoming more business friendly and more likely to hire. I haven't looked at the most recent numbers, but it was kind of revealing that of all the jobs earlier this year, all the jobs that have been created since the peak of the recession, half of them had been created in Texas. Now, if you believe that Obama deserves credit for this, you kind of wonder why he put all those jobs in Texas.
Yeah, it's hard to think that he can transfer enough folks from blue states down there to make a difference in next year's election. But there's not a major secret as to why certain states are doing very well and certain states are not. In fact, it was mentioned on that report on Fox and Friends this morning that Illinois, just to the south of Wisconsin, has dropped 40 places in this survey over the past 5 years. And it's probably going to get even worse since their big effort to fix their fiscal calamity there was to drastically raise income taxes and business taxes in the state. So I'm sure that's going to bode very well for them over time. Speaking of President Obama, he was on his latest victory lap, not spiking the ball effort yesterday in going to El Paso, Texas for a fundraiser. But before the fundraiser, he spoke at the U.S.-Mexican border and basically took credit for having solved the border security problem.
We have gone above and beyond what was requested by the very Republicans who said they supported broader reform as long as we got serious about enforcement. All the stuff they asked for, we've done.
So I put more people on the ground, so what's your problem, people? Now it's just anyone who's opposed to my vision of immigration reform is just a stick in the mud.
Or now they're going to say we need to quadruple the Border Patrol. Or they'll want a higher fence. Maybe they'll need a moat. Maybe they want alligators in the moat. They'll never be satisfied.
He also claimed that the fence was pretty much done. I haven't been able to verify that one way or the other. I'd be pretty dubious of that claim. But Jim, basically claiming that because you've made some changes that folks do applaud in terms of personnel and rounding up more folks and so forth, does not mean the problem is over. This is apparently his effort to say that phase one is done and now we can get to the naturalization process or amnesty, depending on who you talk to. Anyone who says that border security has to come first should be satisfied. This is ridiculous.
Greg, my first thought, so when he mentions the moat with the let's go back to that. Is that a serious offer? Could we do that? Because that sounds kind of awesome. You think about the drug smugglers. You talk about all the folks crossing the border we don't want. A moat with alligators sounds pretty good, and I'm hoping that at some point sharks with lasers on their heads end up being a proposal as well. By the way, according to the General Accounting Office, no. The fence isn't even close to being done. And it says something about Obama that he would go out and make this claim. It also says something about him that his laugh line about the moat and the alligators, it's an idea, you know, his idea of a ridiculous idea probably sounds pretty good to a lot of Americans. it's interesting. It's interesting that he went to Texas. It's interesting this is the first major issue he's addressing in the post-Osama bin Laden kill era. He thinks he's got a winner here. I think a lot of people can kind of see the strings on this, which is that he's not polling as well amongst Hispanics as he probably needs to. The Republicans aren't doing terribly well either, but right now I think a lot of Hispanics and Latino voters are kind of on the sidelines and evaluating their options for 2012. Obama pretty explicitly promised the DREAM Act, promised a de facto amnesty, and with 2 years of a Democratic Congress, didn't get it done. And we think kind of pretty clear that this Republican Congress in the House is not going to back that. So what he's got to do is kind of, you know, once again, dangle that that low-hanging fruit and say, oh, you know, if you vote for me, you'll get this, you'll get this. And unsurprisingly, I think there's going to be skepticism that, you know, that the guy who promised it and failed to deliver is going to somehow make it happen in his second term. So frustrating. I think it's really kind of revealing that Obama – I mean, this goes up there with Napolitano saying our southern border is secure. I mean, in their world, everything's fine. In the minds of Arizonans and New Mexicans and Californians and Texans, it is not. And it is still a very serious problem. And it'd be nice if we had a president who lived on this planet. But we don't. We're not going to get one until January 2013, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. Just mocking anyone who opposes his position. Obviously pandering to a specific demographic, which is the fastest growing demographic in this country based on the last census. And one of the folks I follow on Facebook who follows these things pretty closely says, does he really think these minority groups are that stupid? And the answer is yes. He does think they're that stupid. Unfortunately, a lot of times the arguments work. And hopefully the fact that the president didn't deliver on what they thought was a major issue in the first 2 years, like you mentioned, that they won't be bamboozled into thinking that he's their ticket to getting anything significant accomplished the next time around either. So,
yeah, we should just add that, you know, look, you know, why would he believe it worked? Well, it's worked in the past, you know, that, you know, he's made these grandiose promises and not delivered and not really suffered any serious consequences as a result of it, you know, till, you know, like, unless you argue the 2010 midterms. If you promise the moon a second time, probably he believes that I will see it as more, better option than the Republicans if, you know, there's any whiff of anti-immigrant sentiment coming off of the Republican candidate.
On to our martini number three now. And the son of Osama bin Laden is upset. He's upset at how his father was killed. He's upset about the fact that the body was dumped in the sea. He was not arrested and tried in a court of law. And he was, you know, you mentioned this in The Jolt, Jim, which is the greatest irony of all time. Arbitrary killing is not a solution to political problems. So good thing that he had a lot of wisdom from his father in coming up with these statements.
Yeah, you see a quote like that from one of bin Laden's sons, and you figure, ah, this guy must be adopted. obviously, let's be just be really quiet for 1 second, Greg. Yeah, that's the sound of the world's smallest violin playing for the bin Laden sons. You hear them complaints and how their dad didn't get a trial, and I was going to say my heart bleeds, but really right now it's bin Laden's heart that's bleeding at the bottom of the sea. So, it really is kind of remarkable the cognitive dissonance that the sons of the guy who's responsible, you know, the blood of thousands of people on his hands, actually can complain about this. It almost sounds like an Onion article. And you just kind of picture the staff of the Onion sitting around, picking up the New York Times, seeing this article, and just saying, let's take the day off. We can't compete with this. There's nothing we can come up with that would be more ridiculous or ironic or unbelievable than the Bin Laden family complaining about improper legal techniques for prosecuting and stuff. I also would note this is just kind of keep in keeping with the Al-Qaeda philosophy of one rule for us, another rule for you, other guys, because I believe in their big Bin Laden's dead statement, they were upset that Bin Laden hadn't been met on a battlefield.
Right.
Well, you know how you address that, guys? Don't run from Tora Bora. Stand there so we can bomb you, and then you get your battlefield death the way you want. You know, it's not our fault that he was sitting in his jammies when our guys showed up. So, humorous and yet outrageous and frustrating and, illuminating. I hope this kind of indicates that the rest of the world picks up on hypocrisy isn't even a big enough word. Extraordinary double standard of the jihadists and the jihadists' families is clear. But, these guys have always been this way. And so I don't know if that's going to if this example is needed to change public opinion any further on this.
And this is the son who supposedly renounced terrorism and his dad back in the 90s. So you can only imagine what the rest of the family is thinking right about now. So, Jim, we'll have to leave it there. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Have a great day.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.